people in Iraq head for the polls for early parliamentary elections amid tight security across the country. Iran says the International Atomic Energy Agency's silence on an act of sabotage against its Karaj nuclear site encourages terrorist attacks on such facilities. France criticizes Britain's immigration policies and calls for talks between the EU and the UK for a migration treaty. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behram Sanjavi. Good to have you with us. So beginning with Iraq, polls have opened in the country for an early election that's being held in response to the 2019 street protests. This is the fifth parliamentary vote since the ouster of former dictator Saddam Hussein in 2003. Nearly 25 million people are eligible to cast their ballots. Some 3,500 candidates, including 1,000 women, are vying for 329 seats in parliament. Results are expected on Monday. Iraqi top Shia cleric Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani has called for a large voter turnout. Security is tight, with all airports closed until Monday morning. More than 250,000 security personnel have been deployed to secure polling stations across the nation. Iran has criticized the International Atomic Energy Agency for failing to condemn an act of sabotage against its Karaj nuclear site on June the 23rd. Head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, says that the IAEA, with its silence, effectively encourages this type of terror attack. He said that the agency was not allowed to replace damaged cameras as required under the Iran nuclear deal because of the noncompliance with relevant obligations by the U.S. and the Europeans. Islami noted that Iran won't tolerate the IAEA's double standard. It stressed that Iran is pushing ahead with its civilian nuclear program, adding that the country has now more than 120 kilos of 20% enriched uranium. It said that Iran will maintain its self-reliance on supplying Tehran's research reactor with fuel. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has paid an official visit to Syria, arriving from Lebanon. He sat for talks with President Bashar al-Assad and other top officials on regional developments and mutual ties. Mohammed Ali reports from Damascus.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian arrived in the Syrian capital, Damascus, and met with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. They discussed the military condition in Syrian soil. President Assad stressed that work will continue until liberating all Syrian territories from terrorism and ending foreign illegal presence. Talks also covered regional and international developments, including the situation in Afghanistan. Amir Abdullahian briefed President Assad on the Iranian nuclear file negotiations, expressing Iran's goal to achieve sustainable development. He said Iran wants to cooperate with its neighbors to break the economic siege on his country and neutralize sanctions imposed on the Iranians. Amir Abdullahian also underlined the importance of boosting economic cooperation with Syria.
In the past weeks, we reached important agreements for a full development of relations between both countries in all fields, as well as setting programs for implementing such cooperation agreements in economic, trade, and tourism sectors.
Amir Abdullahian also discussed with his Syrian counterpart Faisal al-Maqdad recent developments, including the results of his talks with Lebanese and Russian officials related to the Syrian crisis. Maqdad expressed Syria's full support to Iran in its nuclear file.
Syria fully supports Iran in its efforts in the nuclear issue. We strongly condemn the U.S. moves aimed at manipulating Iran's nuclear program and other regional affairs.
This is the second visit for the top Iranian official to Syria in less than 2 months. His trip is part of an international and regional tour which started in Russia. Abdullahian's visit sends a clear message to the enemies of the resistance alliance that decades-long ties between the two countries are constantly developing, despite Western and Israeli pressures on both states. It's clear that the two countries maintain the same stance that resistance is the only path to victory in the face of their mutual enemies. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Condemnations are pouring in over Friday's deadly bomb blast targeting a Shia mosque in the northern Afghan city of Kunduz. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has condemned the attack, urging Afghan officials to punish the perpetrators. Ayatollah Khamenei urged Afghan authorities to take measures to prevent such terrorist attacks. Iraqi top Shia cleric Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani has also denounced the attack, saying the Islamic nations and the international community have left the Afghan people alone. He called on Afghans to strengthen their national unity and solidarity and take steps to protect civilians from Daesh terrorists. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has slammed the attack, calling such terror acts to be against all religions and humanitarian laws. The Daesh claimed the attack during the Friday prayers killed dozens of worshippers and injured scores more. Sana'a has slammed the UN Human Rights Council for dropping its probe into war crimes the Saudi-led coalition has committed in Yemen. The Yemeni foreign minister described the move as a disregard for international humanitarian law and a disgrace for the council. It said that Riyadh and its allies will not succeed in hiding their atrocities in Yemen. The ministry warned that not extending the probe gives the aggressors the green light to continue their crimes with impunity. On Thursday, the UN top rights body announced an end to its probe into war crimes in Yemen. The decision has already drawn strong criticism from a number of countries and human rights bodies. A French interior minister has called for the start of talks for a migration treaty between the European Union and the UK. Gerald Germany said it's necessary to negotiate migration issues since Michel Barnier, the bloc's former chief negotiator, did not do so when he negotiated Brexit. Germany underlined that France will steer the project when it takes over the EU's rotating presidency in January. He also urged the British government to uphold its promise to finance the fight against the illegal immigrants who gather on the northern French coast in order to cross into England. The issue of trafficking of migrants across the English Channel has been a constant source of friction between Paris and London. France says it currently bears the cost of maintaining border security amid illegal migration. Now, thousands of Italians have taken to the streets of Rome to protest the extension of COVID-19 health pass. Now, hundreds of police officers in riot gear were deployed to areas in Rome. Scuffles broke out between demonstrators and police. Last month, the government announced that the scheme would be extended to all workplaces by mid-October. Under that scheme, any employee refusing to comply would be threatened with suspension without pay. The pass has already been a requirement to enter museums, sporting events, and other public places since August. COVID-19 vaccination campaigns continue across the world. Pseudo-protests against them, anti-vaccination demonstrations have been taking place almost frequently in many developed nations. And this has naturally created heated debates and conversations on social media. Hashtag Trending is here to give you a glimpse into it all.
While most of us have either been vaccinated or are planning to get our vaccine in the coming days and weeks, there's still a small but vociferous minority who's campaigning vehemently against the whole vaccination drive. Hey, by the way, I'm Ali Reza back with another Hashtag Trending, and in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to be bringing you some of the comments that you and others have left in response to these anti-vaxxers and their unsubstantiated claims. Stick around. So they still claim that the coronavirus is a hoax, or at the very least, that the vaccines are bad for you. These people are not just uninformed. It seems like they're deliberately misinformed. They use bogus pseudoscience backed by doctored evidence, fake experts, and conspiracy theories. And the worst part is that most of these people come from developed nations where access to information is unlimited. So these anti-vaccination protests are being held almost routinely across the United States, Canada, Germany, Australia, and you name it. While in the less privileged parts of the world, the vaccination drive is going as smoothly as a mirror. All right, now let's check out some views posted online. The first tweet comes from Rob the Ritter. He wrote, "Protesters and police clashed in Amsterdam during a rally against the COVID-19 passport attended by thousands of people under the slogan, Samen voor Nederland, literally together for Netherlands. Check it out. All right, on to our next tweet by Leroy Johnson. He wrote, "Protest in front of the Department of Education in Brooklyn, New York, in response to thousands of teachers that were fired because they didn't get the shot. Protesters chant, hold the line." Check it out. MJM tweeted,
protesters were protesting and wearing no masks deliberately, knowing it was against the law. Ruptly tweeted, anti-vaccine mandate protesters attack COVID-19 testing unit in New York City. Check it out. Just FYI, the vaccine mandate is the U.S. government's measure to ensure that workers at large businesses get vaccinated, and that seemingly triggered a new round of protests across the U.S. Our next comment by Ina Vernikov for New York City reads, I am not anti-vaccine, but the senseless mandates must end. Encourage, do not mandate. Check it out.
All the essential workers who risk their lives working through the pandemic, instead of being compensated, are now being punished by being fired if they don't take this vaccine. The mandates must end. This is still the United States of America, and our government needs to stop mandating New Yorkers how to live their lives. Encourage, do not mandate.
On to our next tweet by Ankit Sharma. He wrote, all those who are losing their job because of the vaccine mandate, you all will be heroes in our books forever. You stand for our freedom and our future. The next tweet by Mac reads, in reply to Ankit Sharma's tweet, you should propose to create a special committee that would review people's health circumstances to consider whether they could be exempt from the mandate. Otherwise, we only have two totalitarian choices. The mandate is necessary to limit the spread. So in order for the vaccine to work, the majority of the people need to get vaccinated. And that's where I agree with the mandates and the passports and other measures. But that also means that the less affluent nations, the ones ignored by the West when it came to providing them with the necessary vaccines, must also get vaccinated. After all, they are also an integral part of this global village that we live in, and without them also being fully vaccinated, the vaccines in New York and Amsterdam and Paris are not going to be effective for so long. Our last batch of comments starts with one by Ryan Cooper. He wrote, remember how everyone warned that if we didn't help poor countries get vaccinated, we would get dangerous new variants, and then that happened, and rich countries are still barely even trying. The final comment comes from Rawiri McCree Jansen. They wrote, I disagree with the assertion legacy of people who are not getting vaccinated providing a breeding ground for the virus to continue to generate variants. Variants will arise in poor countries with low vax rates because rich countries didn't share vaccines. We're all in this together. And that's all we have for you in today's edition of Hashtag Trending. Until next time, take care and bye-bye.
Okay, let's go back to some news we had in the beginning of this bulletin. The UN Human Rights Council has stopped the probe that it had launched into war crimes committed by the Saudi-led military coalition in Yemen. Now, from Sana'a, the Yemeni capital, let's bring in Hussein al-Bukhaiti, who's an activist and political commentator. Mr. Bukhaiti, tell us how the Yemenis feel. They should really be disappointed in this. They didn't have, of course, much hope in any other international body to do anything for them, and this is maybe even the worst they could expect.
Yes, I mean, this is exactly what's happening, that the Human Rights Council in Geneva has actually failed the Yemeni people. I just want to remind you that at the beginning of the war on Yemen, I think in the first year, there was a Dutch draft to form an independent investigation team to be sent to Yemen to investigate all war crimes by all sides. But UK at the time, with pressure from Saudi Arabia and the United States, has actually blocked and vetoed the draft. And now we see that after forming this international independent investigation team who has been sent to Yemen before, who has actually shown in many of the reports that they have released crimes that have done actually by all sides, but most and the major crime was actually done directly by the Saudi-backed forces or by the United Arab Emirates and their secret prison and torture and killing and kidnapping and all type of crimes that only we can see ISIS and Daesh is doing in many other countries. Those type of crime, I think that's why Saudi Arabia has had a huge pressure on many countries and on the UN itself, and they have now ended this body that was actually investigating all war crime on Yemen. And this is actually the first time in 15 years, which is the history in history for the Human Rights Council to do so, because I think United Nations only understand the language of money. They don't understand the language of law. They don't understand the language of human rights, of keeping Yemeni civilians safe, of condemning who is responsible behind this crime. And I think that now Sana'a should take the decision. I think the United Nations and countries like UK and US and other countries, of course, they only understand the language of money, but as well they understand the language of strength. Yemeni army should take a huge step. Now they should actually target Saudi Arabia, destroy Saudi Arabia oil infrastructure, because with that oil, with that money, Saudi can buy the UN, they can buy whatever they want. And what's actually adding insult to injury is that the Saudi are celebrating this decision. That the international team was investigating all the crimes that have done by all parties. Why the Saudi Arabia is not happy? Because they know that most of the crime, if not all the crime, actually, they are done by the Saudi and the Saudi-backed forces.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Hossein Al-Bakhati, activist and political commentator in Sana'a. A small airliner has crashed in Russia's Tartaristan region, killing 16 people on board. The L-410 aircraft went down near the town of Menzelinsk. The twin-engine short-range transport plane was carrying parachute jumpers when it went down. The cause of the crash is yet to be investigated. The Russian Emergency Ministry says 7 people have been pulled alive from the wreckage. Survivors sustained injuries, but their condition is not known. Taiwan says it will not bow to pressure to accept China's rule as tensions escalating between Taipei and Beijing over the self-ruled island's independence bid. Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen says that there should be absolutely no illusion that the Taiwanese people will bow to such a pressure. She noted that nobody can force Taiwan to take the path China has laid out for it. The president, however, expressed hope for the easing of tensions with Beijing, which flared up after Chinese fighter jets flew over Taiwanese air defense zone earlier this month. China considers Taiwan as part of its own territory, with President Xi Jinping recently promising to realize a peaceful reunification with the island. Beijing is also angry at Taipei's growing military reliance on Washington. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsetodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsetodayEnglish.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
writing. Listeners special.
Thank you.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 10th, 2021. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast, the programs of IRIB English Radio, because your views are very important to us. If you have any messages for our listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Dear listeners, please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back to your program. It's Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports, as you may know, enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. So, all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. And here I truly appreciate those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Konstantin Lasgin from Russia, Dan Olsen from Sweden, and Hector Fria Hofre from Chile. So, Konstantin, Dan, and Hector, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Many thanks for sending us these reception reports. And of course, we have received so many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read their emails or letters. Here we have an email from Denis Kosolapkin from Russia. Thank you, Dennis. From India, we have an email from Motaram Kaga. Thank you. We have another email from one of our regular listeners, from Dan Olsen from Sweden. From Richard Cook from England, we have an email, one of our regular listeners. And last but not the least, is an email from Vikram Keshwala from the UK, one of our regular listeners. Many thanks for sending us these emails from around the world. So please, after a short break, we will be back with these emails and letters. So please keep us company until the end. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Russia. This email is from Denis Kosolapkin. Denis says, hello, Radio IRIB, Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, actually IRIB English Radio. I am Denis and I live in Russia. I really like your country, Iran, with great people and ancient history. For me, it's amazing to see how different people with different religions are living in one place peacefully, without wars and violence. And I believe that this is a unique experience that you must share with other nations as well. Okay, and that's all from Denis Kosolapkin from Russia. So Denis, salam and warmest greetings to you. It's a pleasure to have you with us as a new listener. Thank you for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. So as you said, you love Iran. That's amazing. It seems that you know the ancient culture and history of Iran. It seems that you know Iran very well. So as an advice, to know more about Iran, please refer to Iranian sources like IRIB English Radio. So here in IRIB English Radio, we broadcast programs about Iran. One of them, which is about the tourist attractions of Iran, is Close Up Iran, which is broadcast on Mondays from IRIB English Radio. You can refer to Iranian sources, as I said, like IRIB English Radio. And that's great. As you said, different people with different religions, ethnicities, live in Iran peacefully, without wars or violence. And as you said, it's a unique point. It's a unique experience. Yes, in Iran, we have different religions, although the majority of Iranians are Muslims. We have Zoroastrians, we have Christians, Armenians, Christians, we have Jews. Yes, all people live in one place peacefully without wars or violence, and that's great. And for your information, all these religions have a representative in the parliament, in Iranian parliament, which is called Majlis, and that's good. So it seems you know a lot about Iran, and that's amazing. Denis Kosolapkin from Russia, many thanks for writing this great email to us. Please keep up the good work, write to us soon, and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. And from India, as I said, we have an email from Mutaram Kagal. He or she says, "Hi, I am a new listener of Iran English Radio Language Service, or IRIB English Radio. I listen to your programs and visit your website time to time, and have to say that both of them are quite informative and interesting, radio and the website. But usually I only look at your news in the website. It's for 2 months that I'm listening to your programs. Please send me a QSL card. Thank you." So, salam and warm greetings to you, Mutaram Kaga from India, and welcome to the world of IRIB English Radio. We are so happy to have you as a new listener of our radio. We are so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in your region and in your country, India. We hope that this mutual relationship between you and us continue. Of course, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. In the time of pandemic, we sent you EQSL cards. So please keep up the good job. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. Thank you again, Mutaram Kaga from India, for sending us this email. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So, dear listeners of Listeners Special, after a short break, I will be back with other emails, of course, from an email from Sweden. This email is from Dan Olson. Welcome back. Dan Olson, one of our regular listeners from Sweden, has sent us an email. Dan says, "Dear radio friends on IRIB, my name is Dan Olson and I am a Swedish radio listener. The 26th of September 2021, I had the pleasure to hear IRIB. I have enclosed an MP3 file, but apart from the program, I am 61 years old. And I work as a teacher for children between 6 to 9 years. My interests and hobbies are listening to the radio, sports, and collecting stamps. Best regards from Sweden." Salam and warm greetings to you from Iran, Dan Olsen, one of our regular listeners from Sweden. Lots of gratitude to you for sending us this email. So we received your MP3 file, which is a part of the program of IRIB English Radio. So you had the chance to catch our programs, as you said, on September 26, 2021. And that's great. Please tell us your views about that program. Yes, I wish you wrote your opinion about that program. You listened anyway. We wish you all the best. Write to us soon, Dan Olsen from Sweden, and tell us your views about our programs. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. And from England, we have an email from Richard Cook. Richard Cook is one of our regular listeners who says, "Good evening, dear IRIB English Radio staff. I hope you are well. Today I was picking you up rather good in English on 9855 on my mini whip antenna at 1952 UTC talking about Trump and Biden. Here in the UK, COVID slowly is calming down, but at the moment, we have gas suppliers shortage because of the lack of drivers. I hope to hear from you soon. Best regards from England." Salam, warm greetings to you, Richard Cook from England, and thank you very much for writing to IRIB English Radio. So, you had the chance to pick up IRIB English Radio signals, and that's good. And the program's talking about Trump and Biden. Maybe it was in the limelight. Yes, in the limelight is a program about political issues, and maybe you were listening to that program. So, if the COVID is calming down in your country, it's great. It's COVID is also calming down in Iran because most of the people are vaccinated, and that's great. And about the issue you mentioned about the shortage of gas, I've heard about it in the news, of course. Yes, I have heard about gas shortage in England, in the UK, and I'm sorry for that. So Richard Cook, write to us soon and tell us about the news in your country. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Thank you for writing this email to us. And after a short break, I will be back with another email from the UK. Welcome back, and Vikram Keshwala, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. He says, "Dear IRIB English Radio staff, I could listen to your radio station today, and I'm writing to send you a reception report. I hope it will be of interest to you. Thank you so much for providing your program to the public, and continue to broadcast on shortwave while other broadcasters are leaving it. If you issue QSL cards, I would very much like to receive one, if at all possible. I look forward to future programs, and I will gladly send in reception reports from time to time. That is all. Thanks again for your help and kindness, and I look forward to hearing from you soon." Salam and warm greetings to you from Iran, Vikram Keshwala. Many thanks for sending us this email. It's great to have you with us. And it's great to hear that you, Vikram Keshwala, like many of our dear listeners from around the world, prefer listening to shortwave radio, traditional radio. It's good to hear your attitude toward this issue, because many of us like this way of broadcasting, shortwave radio, and that's great to hear your attitude toward this issue. So my colleagues will soon send you an eQSL card because sending paper QSL cards is not possible at the time of pandemic. So Vikram, please write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Thank you for your commitment and kindness toward IRIB English radio. And now, dear listeners, time tells me we have to skip to the next section of Listen's Special, which is this week's interview. And this week's interview is conducted with one of our regular listeners. We hope you'll enjoy it.
Thank you for having me on the program. Yes, I try to tune in to IRIB English program as often as possible on different technical media like satellite, shortwave, but also I listen to IRIB English on the internet. And I think IRIB English is doing a fantastic job because it's really hard to find news about Iran in the West, which is correct. I mean, Iran is a lot in the news in the West, in the Western media, but unfortunately, it's always a very colored view, a very one-sided view. And IRIB is proposing the news like it is, but the truth about Iran. I mean, IRIB is giving the Iranian point of view, and it gives a total other perception about the news than what you hear here in the Western media, which is always about, I'll give you one example about the nuclear file. As a matter of fact, the nuclear file in Iran is going about civilian nuclear energy, peaceful nuclear energy, and here in the West they always bring the nuclear file of Iran as, you know, nuclear weapons, about aggressive policies, which is not at all true. So I listen to IRIB English to hear the truth about Iran. Yes, I call upon all listeners of IRIB English, please do like as I did, visit Iran, because if you want to know Iran, of course you can tune into IRIB English, but also it's really important that you visit the country yourself to experience the friendliness of the people, the beauty of the country, the rich culture and the rich history of Iran. So please visit Iran. It's very easy to visit. I mean, the infrastructure is good, the roads, the public transport, the hotel infrastructure. So it's really easy to visit the country and to have a look yourself.
And here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with us, and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RIB English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. More injustice against Yemen as the United Nations turns its back on even investigating possible war crimes. This as the UN Human Rights Council has voted to shut down its war crimes investigations in Yemen. How can this be the case when at least 100,000 civilians have been killed in the Saudi-led onslaught on the Yemeni people?
The United Nations Human Rights Council has voted against renewing the body's mandate for investigating possible war crimes committed by the Saudi-led coalition in Yemen. Members narrowly voted to reject a motion brought by countries including the Netherlands and Canada to give UN investigators another 2 years to monitor atrocities in Yemen. It marked the first time in the Council's 15-year history that a resolution was defeated. Ahead of the vote, UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet said there was no peace in sight in Yemen and that urgent funding was needed to avert large-scale famine there. Meanwhile, the Dutch ambassador called the vote a major setback, adding that the council failed the Yemeni people and cut their lifeline to the international community. Rights activists had previously warned that Riyadh was heavily lobbying against the resolution in a blatant attempt to ensure blanket impunity for crimes and other violations of international law in Yemen. They also accused the UNHRC of bowing to Saudi pressure and putting politics before principle. Experts believe the council has lost its credibility by shutting down the investigation.
UN Human Rights Council has lost any credibility it once had, and that was marginal anyway. But by shutting down an investigation into atrocities committed in Yemen, this is something that is clear to anybody that horrendous things are happening in Yemen. And the fact that some other countries have strong-armed those council members to vote against this is just politics, but it's corruption, and it's tragic for the people of Yemen.
This is not the first time Saudi Arabia has used what many call arm-twisting to stop the UN from scrutinizing the Yemen war. Back in 2016, Saudi Arabia was removed from the UN's list of children's rights violators after Riyadh threatened to cut off crucial funding to the world body. The Saudi-led war on Yemen has claimed tens of thousands of lives and displaced millions, resulting in what the UN describes as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The coalition, which is logistically and militarily supported by the West, especially the US and the UK, has repeatedly bombed schools, hospitals, and other civilian facilities during its 7-year onslaught. The United Nations has in the past been criticized for its inaction against Riyadh, but the latest move by the Human Rights Council seems like giving a green light to Saudi Arabia and some of its regional allies to continue their atrocities against impoverished Yemen with impunity.
I'd like to welcome my guests to this program, Director of Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, Mr. Zafar Bangash out of Toronto. And political commentator and peace activist, Brian Terrell, out of Molloy, Iowa.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off with Zafar out of Toronto. Isn't even saying that investigations will be stopped into possible war crimes ironic to begin with? I mean, when there have been so many civilians killed, shouldn't it be obvious that war crimes have been committed?
Oh, absolutely. I think the manner in which the UN Human Rights Council has acted is absolutely scandalous when it is well known and well established that at least 100,000 people have been killed in Yemen since March of 2015 when the Saudis launched their murderous assault on that poorest of countries in the Middle East. And more than a million children are suffering from cholera. The UN agencies themselves have said that the vast majority of the Yemeni people are on the verge of starvation. And for the UN Human Rights Council now to vote to end the investigation into Saudi crimes is absolutely scandalous. I think we also need to keep in mind that the Saudi regime has an atrocious record even at home. There are tens of thousands of political prisoners in Saudi Arabia. Dissidents are murdered. They are shot to death. They are executed. All kinds of other oppressions are taking place inside Saudi Arabia. But in terms of its crimes in Yemen, I think it is well established. I mean, the UN itself has said that there have been hundreds of thousands of casualties over there. The UN itself has said that there is mass starvation, that children are suffering terribly. So to stop this investigation into Saudi war crimes makes a mockery of the UN Human Rights Council and the manner in which it conducts its business.
Well, Brian, Yemen has actually just commemorated an attack on a funeral procession 5 years ago where over 100 people were killed. How can the Saudis get away with that and such an act not be considered a war crime?
Well, it is certainly that was one crime of many, and I think what it comes down to is the U.S. and other Western countries, the arms manufacturers, are making a lot of money off of this. And a investigation into the war crimes is inconvenient, you know, to those. Back a year ago, earlier this year, when it appeared that the United States, President Biden, was talking about cutting off the weapons flow to the Saudis, and the head of CEO of Raytheon Corporation told his stockholders, peace is not going to break out anytime soon in the Middle East, and we will continue to see this as an area of continued growth. I think it's also the politics involved is a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, Saudi Arabia tried to get a seat on this very council, the Human Rights Council of the United Nations, and was defeated, but the bid to stop this investigation was led by the ambassador from Bahrain, and I've been to Bahrain, and to say that Bahrain, the Hamad monarchy in Bahrain is a government for the people of Bahrain with their welfare and interests at heart, is is really absurd. It really is. It's a Saudi proxy, and this is how the Saudis have been able to do this. They really do have a seat on this council, only it's named after the Kingdom of Bahrain.
Well, Zafa, why haven't we seen more intervention to stop the carnage by this Saudi regime in Yemen from the so-called international community again?
Well, basically, as Brian pointed out, it has a lot to do with the sale of weapons, and Saudi Arabia is the largest importer of weapons in the Middle East by far, and in fact, even in terms of weapons imports worldwide, Saudi Arabia is right there at the top. And we need to keep in mind that in weapons sales, the return on profits is enormous. And so the weapons manufacturers want to encourage more wars so that their weapons are sold, so that they can their weapons are used, so that they can sell more weapons. And so wars for them is a profitable business. And that's why we see that around the world, countries like the United States, Britain, France, other weapons manufacturers are very happy to see these wars continue, even when the Saudis are perpetrating horrific crimes. And we also need to keep in mind that these Western countries are also guilty of war crimes, just as the Zionist regime in occupied Palestine is. And, you know, let's remember, back in the earlier this year, the International Criminal Court actually said that they have the right to investigate Israeli crimes against the Palestinians. And when the ICC chief prosecutor was changed in June, because her term ended in June and a new chief prosecutor came on board, this matter against the Zionist regime has gone silent. So we see that not only the Saudi crimes in Yemen, but the Western regimes themselves are guilty of horrendous crimes against humanity, and therefore they're not going to push for any investigation of Saudi crimes. The only time they push for any investigations is if there is a government or a ruler that does not toe the American line, then they go after such a government or particular ruler, and they try to haul that particular ruler before the International Criminal Court. So in this case, we see that there are definitely double standards being applied. I don't think that there is any doubt in the minds of anybody that Saudi Arabia is a gross violator of human rights. It has committed war crimes in Yemen. But unfortunately, there are countries around the world, Western countries, that are quite happy supplying it weapons, and they want to shield the Saudi regime from any criticism or any investigation that will haul these criminals or they bring these criminals to justice.
Ryan, what do you make of what Zafa just said? So if the case is so that these many of these Western governments are also involved in war crimes, whether in Yemen or other places, and continue to basically shield Saudi Arabia. So, I mean, isn't the whole concept then of a United Nations Human Rights Council, and even perhaps the United Nations itself, when these countries have so much power on a committee like that, or in the United Nations itself, like the Security Council, I mean, at the end of the day, what does it really do if these countries are also complicit?
You know, this instance calls to mind just a couple of years ago, the International Criminal Court was investigating the United States for war crimes in Afghanistan, and the United States responded by putting sanctions against the investigators. So, yeah, the Dutch ambassador has said, you know, rightly, that the council has failed the people of Yemen, and in the most immediate sense, that's true, where you have 18 million people facing starvation in the very near term. But in the broader sense, this has failed the people of the world, and it's you know, as just been mentioned, this UN Human Rights Council has had very little credibility, but what credibility it has really, it is lost, and it's tragic for people who are looking for the people of the world, who are looking for ways that to solve problems through diplomacy, but of course diplomacy doesn't bring in a lot of cash for the arms manufacturers, who really are more than our governments, more than our kingdoms and legislators, and more than the United Nations, setting policy and setting the course of the world.
Safar, do you think that if Washington ordered Riyadh to stop the war today, that it could end today?
Oh, absolutely. The United States exercises enormous influence for a number of reasons. As you know, you mentioned in your earlier question that it has a very, very large say in the UN Security Council. The UN Security Council basically is a body in which five permanent members dictate to the rest of the world. And so they can get away literally with crimes and murder, and nobody can touch them. If, for instance, the United States wanted to stop this horrendous war in Yemen and stop these war crimes from being committed in Yemen, it could do so, because the United States is supporting the Saudi regime. It is providing intelligence information. It is, in fact, providing identifying targets for the Saudis to hit, although the Saudis are so incompetent that they often fail to hit military targets, and they target civilian populations, schools, hospitals, grain depots, and so on. The list is endless. I mean, the number of crimes that the Saudis have perpetrated in Yemen is absolutely horrendous. It is well known. It is well documented. The only people that are basically shying away from it is the UN Human Rights Council, under pressure from the Western regimes, because the Western regimes themselves are complicit in these crimes. We need to remember that since 9/11, the United States and its allies have murdered an estimated 32 million people worldwide. You can take Afghanistan and Iraq and Yemen and Libya and Syria, Lebanon, Somalia, Mali at present time. In all of these countries, horrendous crimes are being perpetrated by the Western regimes. And this is well documented. This is not something, this is an Australian professor who did the analysis, and he came up with the figure of 32 million, largely civilians, killed over the last 20 years. So what we are witnessing is worldwide, all of these regimes are perpetrating these horrific crimes. And so in that sense, they are complicit in the Saudi crimes in Yemen as well. And that is why the U.S., although it has the power and the authority to stop these crimes, it doesn't want to do so, as we mentioned earlier, because if the war in Yemen ended, then who's going to be selling weapons to Saudi Arabia? The Saudis will not need any more weapons. And so it has to do with selling weapons, it has to do with Saudi Arabia serving as a cash cow, and it has to do with keeping that entire Middle East region unstable, so that the Zionist regime can continue to maintain its hegemony, and the people of the region, that is the Middle East, continue to pay a very, very heavy price.
You just made interesting points, Zafar and Bryant. So if it is the case, as Zafar has said, that obviously Washington could make this war end, so is it in the U.S.'s strategic interest to keep this war going? I mean, Zafar just talked about, and you also mentioned about, as war selling arms. But at the end of the day, does it help the United States strategically to continue this war against Yemen?
No, it doesn't help the people of the United States. It doesn't help what really are U.S. interests. What it